Hi, I'm Kate. I'm going to read the Bible this evening. Our reading comes from Mark 6, verses 30 to 52. You can find that in the Bibles in front of you, or it'll also be up on the screen. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five and two fish." Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the five loaves and the two fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the two fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened.
Well, hey, my name's Tom, if I haven't met you before. Love to do that after we're done in here. We've got 25 or 30 minutes now to go deep into this passage. Particularly today, I'd love to focus on what interpretation are we meant to make of what we just read? Because the events are actually really simple. They're miraculous, but they're simple. There wasn't enough food. Jesus feeds them all. They gather up some extras. Jesus goes for a walk on the lake. We don't think he was walking on a sandbar. We actually reckon that he was walking on water. It's relatively simple, but what are we meant to do with it? Why does it matter in 2025? Now, to get you started on possible interpretations, possible meanings, possible applications, I've had a bit of a Google. Here's what I've come up with. You could, application number one, start a cafe. Here's what you do. You go on Google Maps, five loaves, two fishes, is a cafe near Neutral Bay, down near Mossman. You could start a cafe. Totally okay application, probably not the big thing on Mark's mind. You could ask Wikipedia, and Wikipedia will tell you that some German theologian I never heard of has at least four application points from the passage. The first one is that we should say grace at meals because Jesus looked up to heaven as he broke the bread that he was multiplying. The second one is the importance of not being wasteful with food, because they gather up the leftovers at the end. And you say, are either of those things problematic? No. But are they what was on Mark's mind when he was writing this? Is that what he was hoping we would get from the incident of feeding 5,000 men plus the women and the children and walking on water? Now, it's 2025, so you probably wouldn't ask Wikipedia. What you'd do is you'd ask AI. And you could ask it something like this. an explanation of Mark chapter 6, 30 to 52 in accord with the theology of More Theological College in Sydney from a Reformed Evangelical perspective with references from Tim Keller, Don Carson with footnotes, because I know you make stuff up, ChatGPT. And if you do that, here's the answers. It'll give you 5 application points. Now, none of these are problematic. All of these are like, oh, I guess so, that's probably fine. The last one sounds particularly poetic. Fight fear with Christology. But I would like to suggest to you today that we can do better when we come to draw meaning, interpretation, application from today's passage. And we can do better when we pay detailed attention to what Mark actually wrote down. If you have a Bible in front of you or it's up on the screen, let's start at the end before we go back to the beginning. 51 and 52 is about to pop up on the screen. This is where we finished. Then he climbed into a boat with them and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Ask yourself this question. What were they meant to understand? They watched Jesus feed a whole bunch of people, and then he walks on water and they're afraid. But Jesus seems to think, Mark seems to think, that if they'd understood something about the feeding of the loaves, then they would have had a totally different interaction with Jesus walking on the water. What meaning were they supposed to get? What interpretation were they supposed to bring to the feeding of the 5,000? That's the question I want to start with today. We're going to go to the very first verse. Let's start in verse 31. I'm going to work verse by verse. We're going to go through literally every verse. So if you've got a Bible in front of you, it's going to help heaps. It'll come up on the screen as well. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they didn't even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Now, what you need to know that's going to help us in a little minute is that that word translated quiet, super reasonable translation, the background word to that is a eremos, which is more like a desert or a wilderness. Are deserts and wildernesses quiet places? Absolutely they are. But the word is a eremos. Come with me to verse 32. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. And the word behind the word solitary is eremos. Now, deserts and wildernesses are indeed solitary places. But it is interesting that it's the same word and they've translated it two different ways. Verse 33, many who saw them leaving recognized them, ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. Verse 34, when Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd. He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Now pause there. Isn't that interesting? Jesus has compassion. When I have compassion for someone, it makes me want to give them a hug. When I have compassion on someone, it makes me want to say something nice to them. When I have compassion on someone, it makes me want to meet their physical needs. When Jesus has compassion, what does he start doing? He starts teaching. That's weird. Unless you actually reckon that the stuff that Jesus taught is good for people and does bring peace like a river and does actually help with the burdens and the anxieties of life. That actually one of the most compassionate things we can do with somebody is to gently, respectfully hold out the word of life to them, because Jesus links compassion and teaching. Notice something else. He looks at them and he sees sheep without a shepherd. Sheep without a shepherd. Now, the rest of this sermon, the next 20 minutes or so, is just going to be flick back, flick forward, flick back, flick forward, because I want to suggest to you that more than any passage we've come across in Mark so far, this one is unlocked by understanding the Old Testament background, and it's going to be like a key in a little lock, and you're going to go, ah, I can see the significance, the meaning, the application of what's going on here. Let me give you an illustration. This is a picture. And you can accurately say a couple of things about this picture. You can say, as a boy, he seems to be crouching down. He can't stand up fully. There's stuff around him. That is all accurate. Now, when you get the Old Testament back, when you get the surroundings, here's what you see. That this boy is at the feet of his dad, who just happens to be in charge of the USA. And now this picture means something. Come to the Old Testament, Ezekiel 34. This is where we find some of the background about Jesus seeing the people as sheep without a shepherd. Ezekiel chapter 34 is your chapter if you've ever got grumpy at religious people. If you've ever had somebody try to throw it down your throat and you were just like, no, thank you, this is your passage. Because this is where God says that he's grumpy with the religious people. And this is where he says those religious leaders who were doing a horrible job of shepherding the sheep, they were meant to guide them, lead them, feed them, but they just made themselves fat. I'm going to do away with those shepherds because they have left my people to be like a flock that lacks a shepherd. And so he says this in verse 14 and 15. They will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. What is the significance of Jesus looking at the people and seeing a bunch of sheep without a shepherd? It's that he is the fulfillment of Ezekiel 34. He is the good shepherd that everyone's been waiting for. Now come back to Mark. We're just going to go flip-flop, flip-flop, back and forth, Old Testament, New Testament for the rest of our time. Let's start in verse 35. Because by this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place. Guess what the background word is? It's a ramos. It's a desert. It's a wilderness. And it's almost like Mark is standing behind our shoulder and he's saying, oi, this happened in a desert. Three times in five verses. Did you notice it was in a desert? It was in a desert, guys. And you're like, why does it matter that it's in a desert, Mark? Exodus 16. This is the background because there was another time once in biblical history where God's people en masse were in a desert without enough to eat. It's once they come out of Egypt. And here's the thing, in the original Exodus, Exodus version 1, God's people were enslaved to a real Pharaoh. They were taken through the waters. It's a miracle. They pop out the other side and they go, that's sweet that we just escaped Pharaoh, but also now we're in a desert. What are we supposed to eat? And so the conversation goes like this. They go to their leader, Moses, with the complaint. And they say, in the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. You brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. What we're supposed to have noticed so far, significance, application, meaning of Jesus feeding the 5,000 is number one, that he's the good shepherd. Number two, he's kind of like Moses, who got the people food in the wilderness. Come back to Mark. We're going to keep going back and forth, back and forth. He says, this is a remote, by this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. They said to him, I lost my place, it'll be great. They said to him, that would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? Now, this is the bit in the passage where I was most confused about why it's included. Because Jesus knows what he's about to do. He's not actually asking them to go and buy bread. Where would you even get that much bread at that short notice? Why is this included? I want to suggest that Old Testament background is going to unlock the meaning of this passage as well. Can you find the book of Numbers? It'll come up on the screen as well. This is Numbers chapter 11. And this is Moses chatting to God. Numbers chapter 11. Where can I get meat for all these people? Would they have enough if flocks and herds were slaughtered for them? Would they have enough if all the fish in the sea were caught for them? Now notice in this interaction, in this chat, there's two parties, right? There's Moses, and Moses says, oi, the people have come to me, they're really hungry, God, how am I supposed to feed them? I could never feed them. And God's the one who comes through. Now notice in the discussion between the disciples and Jesus that there's two parties, yeah? The disciples come to Jesus and they say, we could never get enough. It would take more than half a year's wages. And Jesus actually steps into the role played by God in the original Exodus. What we're supposed to draw from this, meaning, application, significance, is that Jesus is not just a little bit like Moses. He's actually the true and better Moses who's leading us in, get this, a second Exodus. In Exodus number one, they get out from slavery to Pharaoh. In Exodus number two, which is the one that you and I are a part of, Jesus leads his people in freedom out of slavery to what in our church tradition we've often called Satan, sin, and death. Satan, sin, and death. Can I convince you that all people everywhere are slaves to death? Because you cannot not die. Everyone ends up dying. You are enslaved from the moment you come into this world to the idea of death. And no matter how healthy you live, all you get to do is you get to put it off. Because we all at some point die. We are slaves to death. But our true and better Moses, Jesus, leads us in escape from our bondage to death because he actually overcame it. And what that shows us is that for you and for me, death is not the end. All of us are born into slavery to Satan, sin, and death. Can I convince you that we are all slaves to sin from the moment that we are born? I have a 2-year-old daughter. We'll show you a picture in a minute, but not yet. I have no plans on teaching her to steal. I have no plan of teaching her to hit. I have no plan of teaching her to lie, but I am not going to be surprised when she does it. Because there is something inside of me and you and her and us that is enslaved to sin. And yet here's the thing, Jesus, our true and better Moses, leading us in Exodus number 2, frees us from Satan, sin, and death. I'll try and convince you that we're enslaved to Satan some other day. That's a longer task. But what I want you to see here, significance of Jesus feeding the 5,000, it's this double helix that goes back and forth the whole way through, horrible dance move. And Good Shepherd, New Exodus. Good Shepherd, New Exodus. Come back to Mark. I'll show you that the pattern keeps on continuing. We're up to verse 38. How many loaves do you have? He said, go and see. When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed, pause there for a second. This was something I missed, if you're happy to work with me here. I said at the start we could interpret this passage using Wikipedia, we could start a cafe, we could go ChatGPT. Do you realize how much our music influences our theology? How much what we sing and what goes into your earpieces influences the way we think? This is Josiah Queen, who sings that Dust on Our Bibles song, if it's all over your Instagram. And I really like it. And I like lots of what Josiah Queen is doing. And I had very little charge on my phone when I took this screenshot. And he's got a song called Fishes and Loaves. Here's his application. Here's the meaning he draws from it. I'm trying to let go. My heart isn't easy, but I give you control. I know it's not much, but I know what I owe. I give you all my fishes and loaves. Now, firstly, is the plural of fish, fish or fishes? I'm not super sure, but what he's drawing as an application is that when we bring a little bit to God, he can use it to do a lot. The little bit in your hand turns into a lot when God multiplies it. Now, here's the trick. That's a much better application of John's narrative than it is of Mark's narrative. Can I teach you some deep Bible reading stuff here? We want to be deep Bible people. There's 4 Gospels, and there's 3 of them that the smarty people call the Synoptic Gospels. Optics, something to do with how you look. Optics, sin, something to do with together or on the same page. So 3 of the Gospels, they kind of often end up telling similar stories from similar angles with similar applications. And then there's John, and he's called the non-synoptic Gospel. Because he often tells stuff in a totally different way, and he often draws a different interpretation from it. Now, here's the thing. In John's story, there's a little boy. And the little boy brings the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. And what Josiah Queen has done there is he said, imagine being that boy, imagine seeing what's happened to my bread and my loaf. And this is amazing. And if you were going to say, the application here is that Jesus can do a lot with the little that I bring him, you'd be on interesting grounds if you got that from the book of John, where the boy is actually mentioned. Because John goes on to apply it and say that the real meaning is that Jesus is the bread of life. And it happens in the same chapter, chapter 6. If you want to get bored of this sermon, just read John 6. That's totally okay. But here's the thing. We're in the book of Mark. And a deep Bible reading skill is this. To recognize that Mark's way of telling me about Jesus feeding the 5,000 is different from John's way of telling me about the feeding of the 5,000. And they're both helpful, but what I want to do is make sure I get the juice out of Mark's account when I'm reading Mark's account. And so, are you happy to come back with me to where we were? Because we're up to Mark chapter 6, verse 38, where the fish and the loaves come across. There's no boy in this narrative. And so the application, the meaning, the interpretation that Mark has on his mind is not that Jesus is going to multiply my fish and my loaves. But it does seem to have a lot and be unlocked by the Old Testament background. Are we able to pull up Mark chapter 6, verse 38? We'll pick it up from there. How many loaves do you have? He said, go and see. When they found out, they said 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. Which is weird when you think about it. Because where are they? Don't know much about deserts, green grass, not super compatible. Why? And then it's grass. Like, is this just a tautology? Is this saying the same thing twice? Why is Mark saying they sat down on the green grass? Can I suggest to you that the Old Testament is going to help us? Psalm 23. Have you got Psalm 23? This is lots of people's favorite psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. Sounds familiar. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. Can we have a little bit of a brain break? I've been working you really hard. Let's talk about sheep. I'll tell you a story. In 2020, 2021, I worked for a group that helped churches. I found myself driving through regional New South Wales in the fully like country ute thing of a country pastor called Bruce, who wore R.M. Williams, not because he wanted to look good, but because he was an actual farmer guy, right? This guy, he had a rhubarb on the front of his car. We left later because he wanted to not drive along the country roads when the kangaroos were out. Like, this guy has stories and guns and stuff that I don't have and I don't plan on getting. He was a real country guy. And I've been thinking a little bit about sheep and shepherds and the Bible. And I said, Bruce, tell me about sheep, as we kind of drove through some farmland. And he said, Tom, there's two things you got to know about sheep. First thing is sheep are dumb. I was like, thanks, Bruce. But it does work a little bit, because in Isaiah, it says we all like sheep have gone astray, each of us lean to our own way, do bar, bar, bar. Don't worry about that joke if you haven't been in church for a while. So the second thing he said is this. Oi, Tom, sheep exist for the farmer. I was like, oh, that's interesting. What do you mean? He's like, sheep are an economic proposition. That's the livelihood of the farmer. I was like, that's actually really helpful, because when I think about sheep, I think about cute Bunnings cuddle yards that I went to with my little daughter yesterday at Chatswood. Yeah? And you go, that's sheep and a shepherd, right? There's my big girl being a shepherd. But actually, that's not really the sheep shepherd thing that's on Jesus' mind or Mark's mind. Here's another Australian iconic image of shepherds and sheep. This is down in the National Gallery of Victoria. This is like the most Australian image of sheep stuff. And this is rough. This is strong. This is sweaty. This is not particularly kind and gentle. And the question I want to ask is, when Jesus talks about sheep and shepherds, what's he actually thinking? What does he actually want us to get? John chapter 10, because this is the moment when Jesus calls himself the good shepherd and he helps us understand what he's getting at. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. I take it that in life you have at least two alternatives. You could go off being a rugged individualistic self and chart your own course through the world and take new ground and be your own you. And another alternative is that you could be a sheep who's known by your loving shepherd, who would do anything for you, even to the depths of giving up his own life. You can be known and know the one who made you. And yet, the choice is yours about how you would like to live your life. Mark chapter 6. Let's keep going back and forth, back and forth. I want to suggest today, close attention to the Old Testament background unlocks meaning in this passage. So verse 40, they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. That just happens to be the same groupings that Moses got his people to sit down in when he's being the leader of the original Exodus. Verse 41, taking the five loaves and the two fish, looking up to heaven, he gave them and he broke the loaves. He gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided two fish among them all. Verse 42, they all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. And there's women and children, so it's a much bigger number. Verse 45, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake. He was all alone on the land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. And shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. Now, could I take you to Psalm 77? This one came quite a little bit later in my time studying in preparation for today. There is a surprising overlap between everything we've just read and Psalm 77. Can I read it to you? Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. Just take it from the bottom up with me. What you've got here is Moses and Aaron, the leaders of the original Exodus. What you've got here is lead your people like a flock, the idea that Jesus is the good shepherd. And it's all in combination with the idea that your footprints were not seen, which I'm feeling pretty confident actually does relate to Jesus walking on the water. Now, if I was a better preacher, I'd know what that actually means. But I just thought the overlap was really cool. Can I take you to something that I do know what it means? Job chapter 9. Because in Job chapter 9, it talks about God alone stretching out the heavens and treading on the waves of the sea. In Mark chapter 6, who do we see treading on the waves of the sea? You see Jesus himself. And so strand one of this double helix the whole way through is that Jesus is the good shepherd. Strand two that you pick up from the Old Testament background is that Jesus is leading a new exodus to take us out of our slavery to Satan, sin, and death. Strand three is that that guy is no regular guy. But he acts like and talks like God himself. Because only God walks on the sea. And you come to Mark chapter 6, verse 49 to 50, you see this even more clearly. He was about to pass by them, and if you know your Old Testament, you know that God passed by Moses while he's in the cleft of the rock, but let's keep moving. He was about to pass by them when they saw him walking on the lake. They thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and he said, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." And when he says, "It is I," he literally says, "I am." I want to suggest that the Old Testament unlocks the meaning of the new. Because when God calls Moses from the burning bush that never burns up, and he says, "Go set my people free," and Moses says, "Who is this God who is sending me? How do I communicate about you to them?" God says, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." And so you come to where we started, verse 51 and 52, the last two verses. He climbed into the boat with them. The wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. What were they meant to understand about the loaves that would inform their reaction to Jesus walking on the water? There's probably more things than this, but at very least they were meant to understand that this is the Good Shepherd. And this is the true and better Moses who's leading us out of our slavery. And this true and better Moses is actually God himself in the flesh with us, which definitely would have changed your reaction to seeing him approaching you on the water while you're straining at the oars. Now, can we close with a couple of options for interpretation? Here's one of the options for how we can interpret this. I listened to a sermon this week from a guy from another church, and it seems like his main point from this passage is that Jesus provides. And you're like, I can see where he got that from. He literally provides. Is that really the big ticket that was on Mark's mind? Like, maybe. I think we can do better through close looking at the Bible. Here's the one from the song previously, that Jesus can do a lot with my little. It sounds poetic, but actually, if you're looking really closely at Mark, I would rather sing the other Josiah Queen songs than that one. Here's where I've got to, and Ben, you guys can come on up. I want you to say, who's me and who's he? Who's he, and therefore, who's me? Think about it. If Jesus is the good shepherd, that's who he is, who am I? I'm a sheep. And that thing that happened to you this week, you can bear it better because you're a sheep under his care. You are not against the universe. The universe is not against you. You are not on your own. That thing that has taken up all of your brain space and kept you awake all night, you can deal with it better because you have a good shepherd looking after you. Who's he? Who's me? Jesus is the true and better Moses. He's the leader of Exodus number 2. And so what that means is that you can resist Satan. He really will flee from you. And you can make progress with that sin because the Holy Spirit helps guide you towards holiness. And you really can overcome death because you will die if Jesus doesn't come back first. And yet, you will go beyond death. This life is not all there is. He's the good shepherd. You're a sheep. He's the true and better Moses. He's leading us in a new Exodus. And he's God himself. And I want to suggest as we lead towards next week that not only do we have 10,000 different reasons to praise God for what he has done and who he is, but that knowing that God for you, if you're still checking out all of this stuff, really does help with life. And the anxieties and the storms and the freakouts and the whatever, knowing God really will help to give you peace like a river. I'm so excited for Nigel to speak to us next week from those topics.